This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Chronicles. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in 2 Chronicles, chapters 18 through 22.
The children's series, The Veggie Tales, has sold over 52 million DVD and VHS copies. Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber teach biblical values to kids. The series became so popular, it was recently sold to NBC, and it was added to the Saturday morning kids programming. But it didn't take long for NBC, for the editors at NBC, to go to work on the VeggieTales. Suddenly, the non-historical references to God and the Bible were sliced. Even Bob and Larry's trademark ending. Remember, kids, God made you special and loves you very much. Even that line was gone from the programs. In other words, the VeggieTales was cooked so strongly and heavily, it cooked all the vitamins out of it. The series creator, Phil Vischer, confessed, had he known how the show would change, he wouldn't have signed the deal with the network. Vischer sums it up this way, VeggieTales is religious, NBC is not. It's a classic case of what the Bible calls being unequally yoked. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14 says it best, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Of course, this is a farming analogy, this idea of being yoked or unequally yoked. Different species of animals with diverse natures harnessed together are going to struggle to cooperate. They're going to fight against each other. They're going to pull in opposite directions. And when a Christian becomes entangled with a non-Christian, in a legally binding relationship, there's going to be a struggle. There's going to be a pull and a fight. And inevitably, some compromise will come. It happens when a believer and an unbeliever go into business. It happens when a believer and an unbeliever get married. It happens when NBC and VeggieTales partner together. And it happened when Jehoshaphat joined forces with Israel. 2 Chronicles chapter 18 begins. Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and by marriage he allied himself with Ahab. Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, married the daughter of his northern rival Ahab. It ratified a peace treaty they signed together. But this was an unequal yoke. Jehoshaphat was a good and godly king. Ahab was a wicked man, an idolater, a blasphemer, a Baal worshiper. And he was a man that God intended to judge. Well, after some years, he went down to visit Ahab in Samaria. And Ahab killed sheep and oxen in abundance for him and the people who were with Jehoshaphat and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth Gilead. He was recruiting Judah's military assistance. So Ahab, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, will you go with me against Ramoth Gilead? And he answered him, I am as you are, and my people as your people. We're related. We're kin. Sure I will. We will be with you in the war. And here is the problem with a believer being yoked with an unbeliever. If God has his sights set on judging your wicked colleague, you find yourself in the line of fire. Jehoshaphat may have been having second thoughts about his decision because in verse 4 he says to the king, please inquire for the word of the Lord today. Before he jumps into this, he wants to get God's direction. Problem is, it's too little, too late. Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, shall we go to war against Ramoth Gilead or shall I refrain? And they said, go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand. There's one problem here. These are the wrong prophets. When you need wisdom, make sure you go to the right prophets, not the wrong prophets. The wrong prophets are unprofitable. These were the prophets of Baal, not the prophets of Jehovah. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not still a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him? Hey, I want a right prophet. I want a true prophet, a prophet of God. And so the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, well, there's still one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, but I hate him because he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. He is Micaiah, the son of Imlah. And Jehoshaphat said, let not the king say such things. Micaiah was a true prophet of God. He wasn't on Ahab's payroll. He wasn't a prophet for sale. Micaiah was God's spokesman. He was a prophet of the king. He prophesied not just what Israel wanted to hear, but what God had to say to his people. Well, then the king of Israel, and I'm sure he did it reluctantly, called one of his officers and said, bring Micaiah, the son of Imlah, quickly. Let's get this over with as quick as we can. Then the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, clothed in their robes, sat each on his throne. And they sat at a threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria. All the big meetings and important business deals and decisions, councils and all, were all done at the gates of the city. And they sat at the threshing floor, and all the prophets prophesied before them. Now imagine the prophet Micaiah. Suddenly, he appears in tattered garments. And he appears before these two kings sitting on these splendid thrones. Micaiah may have been intimidated. What would you have been had you been brought out and suddenly you're thrown before these two kings are sitting on their thrones? Might have been a little bit frightening. But here's the problem. Micaiah had recently seen another king sitting on his throne. And it gave him courage. And we're going to find in a minute, because of that vision, he speaks boldly to these two kings. But there was a man named Zedekiah, the son of Chenana, who had made horns of iron for himself. And he said, thus says the Lord, with these you shall gore the Syrians until they are destroyed. So he's running around with these little horns on his head. You know, you'll get the Syrians, you'll gore the Syrians. You know, just kind of a flair for the dramatic, you might say. This is Zedekiah. I mean, he's just kind of a demonstrative, kind of one of these evangelists, you know, prances around on stage and performs for the crowd. He adds a little theatrics here, you know. Acts like a charging bull. And then he shouts out, gore the enemy, go get him, gore the enemy. In reality, his words were just a bunch of bull. But anyway. And all the prophets prophesied so, saying, go up to Ramoth Gilead and prosper, for the Lord will deliver it into the king's hand. Then the messenger who had gone to call Micaiah spoke to him, saying, now listen, the words of the prophets with one accord encouraged the king. Therefore, please let your word be like the word of one of them and speak encouragement. In other words, would you cooperate for once? And Micaiah said, as the Lord lives, whatever my God says, that I will speak. That's one of my favorite characters in all the Bible. No compromise in this man's heart. This is a man who's not for sale, who's not for hire. Micaiah was a representative of God, not some mercenary. He speaks only at God's directive and only for God's glory. Then he came to the king, and the king said to him, Micaiah, shall we go to war against Ramoth Gilead, or shall I refrain? And he said, go and prosper, and they shall be delivered into your hand. Now Micaiah, he really lies. He tries to cut corners here. He knows that God wants to judge King Ahab, but he's afraid that if he tells him the truth, Ahab will retreat and will escape God's judgment. And so he tries to lure him into battle with the promise of victory, knowing that he's going to die in the upcoming battle. Micaiah tries to manipulate rather than communicate, and Ahab, he smells a rat. He knows what he's doing. So the king said to him, how many times shall I make you swear that you tell me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? Ahab knew there was no way Micaiah was going to pronounce a blessing on this evil king, Ahab. Well, in verse 16, Micaiah tells him the truth. Then he said, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let each return to his house in peace. In other words, the vision implies that the king, the shepherd, has died in battle. Ahab is going to die in this battle. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell you he would not prophesy good concerning me but evil? I told you so. Well, then Micaiah and Omai, he recounts a wild story about conversations in heavenly places that have provocative implications here on earth. He says, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne. This was why he wasn't intimidated by the two kings he saw sitting on their thrones, because he had seen the Lord, the true king, sitting on his throne in glory and splendor and honor. What is man compared to God? And all the host of heaven standing on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, who will persuade Ahab, king of Israel, to go up that he may fall at Ramoth-Gilead? God is asking the heavenly host, the angels, there before the throne. Who's going to convince Ahab to go into battle so that he can be judged and so that he might be killed? And so one spoke in this manner and another spoke in that manner. I guess they all had ideas. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. The Lord said to him, in what way? And so he said, I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets. And the Lord said, you shall persuade him and also prevail. Go out and do so. Therefore, look, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of these prophets of yours. And the Lord has declared disaster against you. What a wild story. You know, today, God's throne room in heaven receives visitors from both sides. Evidently, both angels and demons have access to God's throne. You can recall in Job chapter 1, even Satan appeared before God. And here a demon, a lying spirit, volunteers to go and be a lying spirit in the mouth of Ahab's prophets to entice him and lure him into battle. And it's interesting, God allows the ruse. Understand, God never causes evil. God never does evil. But sometimes he uses evil to accomplish his purposes. Case in point, the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. It was at one and the same time, evil's most hideous crime and good's most glorious triumph. God doesn't create it, he doesn't cause it. But sometimes he uses it for his glory. Now you remember the false prophet with a flair for theatrics? Zedekiah? Remember Zedekiah? Verse 23. Then Zedekiah, the son of Chenaanah, went near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, which way did the spirit from the Lord go from me to speak to you? Being kind of sarcastic, isn't he? He's mocking God's true prophet. Micaiah said, indeed, you shall see on that day when you go into an inner chamber to hide. In other words, Ahab will fall and all his false prophets will be hunted down and killed. Well, then the king of Israel said, take Micaiah and return him to Amon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison and feed him with bread in affliction and water of affliction, until I return in peace. Proud Ahab refuses to believe the prophet. And then Micaiah said, if you ever return in peace, the Lord has not spoken by me. And he said, take heed, all you people. And so the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and go into battle, but you put on your robes. And so the king of Israel disguised himself and they went into battle. Now, it was common for ancient armies to post snipers. The idea was to take out the opposing king early in the battle. And once his soldiers saw that he was dead, it would break their morale. You know, they could easily conquer the enemy. Ahab wants Jehoshaphat here to wear the target on his back. That's what he's doing. You dress up as a king, I'm going to fight incognito. That was the idea. Now the king of Syria had commanded the captains of the chariots who were with him, saying, fight with no one, small or great, but only with the king of Israel. Ahab knew he was the target. Jehoshaphat was stupid enough to do it. And so it was when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat and they said, "It is the king of Israel." Therefore, they surrounded him to attack. But Jehoshaphat cried out, and the Lord helped him, and God diverted them from him. And here's why it's so foolish, guys, to get entangled, to get yoked together with an unbeliever. For when God decides to judge your evil partner, if you're close by, if you're tied up with them, you can end up collateral damage. God had mercy on Jehoshaphat, but there's no guarantee there'll be mercy for you. For so it was, when the captains of the chariot saw that it was not the king of Israel, that they turned back from pursuing him. Jehoshaphat just barely escaped. Ahab, though, isn't so blessed. For now a certain man drew a bow at random and struck the king of Israel between the joints of his armor. A random shot. I mean, the archer wasn't even aiming in the direction that the arrow landed. A perfect shot. It struck Ahab between the plates of his armor. Obviously, God was guiding the trajectory of that arrow. You know, the rabbis have a saying, coincidence is not a kosher word. I guess in this verse you could say random is not a kosher word. What appeared random was actually very deliberate. God was behind this curtain pulling the strings. And so Ahab said to the driver of his chariot, "Turn around and take me out of the battle, for I am wounded." The battle increased that day, and the king of Israel propped himself up in his chariot facing the Syrians until evening, and about the time of sunset, he died. The wicked king Ahab bled to death in his chariot, and the sun went down on Ahab's reign at sunset, just as the prophet Micaiah had predicted. Chapter 19. Then Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned safely to his house in Jerusalem. And Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said, and you know what a seer does? He sees. That's right. A seer was a man who saw into the things of God. You know, it was a man who had insight into spiritual things. And he went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore, the wrath of the Lord is upon you." Guys, beware. Your intentions may be noble to get locked up or connected to that person. Oh, I'm just loving a sinner. But you can end up on the wrong side of the ball. You can get caught in the path of God's wrath if you hang out with the wrong people. You can get hurt. Notice the word to King Jehoshaphat. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? You've gotten too close to these men. You've gotten too close to the king of Israel. That's why you've barely escaped with your life. Sometimes we can get close to the people we're trying to help. Sinners, people who don't know the Lord. Our associations, our familiarizations can become too strong. We can get too involved. And when God decides to judge or correct, we can end up in the line of fire. Nevertheless, good things are found in you, in that you have removed the wooden images from the land and have prepared your heart to seek God. All in all, Jehoshaphat was a good man. He loved the Lord. And so Jehoshaphat dwelt at Jerusalem, and he went out again among the people from Beersheba to the mountains of Ephraim, from the south of Judah to the north of Judah, and brought them back to the Lord God of their fathers. Jehoshaphat's near miss must have lit a revival fire in his heart. Because here he goes throughout the land and he brings the people back to God. Then he set judges in the land throughout all the fortified cities of Judah, city by city, and said to the judges, "Take heed to what you are doing, for you do not judge for man, but for the Lord who is with you in the judgment." Oh, how we need judges today who will take this verse to heart. God has ordained government to keep the peace and to settle civil disputes. Our courts are the means by which God accomplishes justice in our land. And so when a judge rules in harmony with God's laws, God is literally with the judge in the judgment. The problem, though, is that in modern times, this is a rarity. The tragedy today is that God's law has become inadmissible evidence in most courts. Judges have thrown out the standard, and our courts have gone haywire. There's no right, there's no wrong. There's no objective, absolute truth governing our courts, and therefore we get all these kinds of bizarre and unfair decisions. Judges today use arbitrary standards. It's interesting, for 200 years, American jurisprudence was based on the Bible and the Ten Commandments. Guys, we forsake it today at our own peril. Now, therefore, let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Take care and do it. For there is no iniquity with the Lord our God, no partiality, nor taking of bribes. Boy, Jehoshaphat had a zeal for justice, a zeal for righteousness in the courts of the land. Moreover, in Jerusalem, for the judgment of the Lord and for controversies, Jehoshaphat appointed some of the Levites and priests and some of the chief fathers of Israel when they returned to Jerusalem. I mean, he was hiring priests to be judges. He needed judges in the land. Probably started airing Judge Judy just because they needed to settle these cases. Jehoshaphat did all he could to establish justice and fairness in Israel, in Judah. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus you shall act in the fear of the Lord, faithfully and with a loyal heart. Whatever case comes to you from your brethren who dwell in their cities, whether of bloodshed or offenses against law, or commandment against statutes or ordinance, you shall warn them, lest they trespass against the Lord and wrath come upon you and your brethren. Do this, and you will not be guilty." Notice God holds the judge responsible for his verdicts. If he doesn't judge fairly, if he doesn't judge righteously, he will be guilty. He will commit the crime. And take notice, Amariah, the chief priest, is over you in all matters of the Lord. And Zebediah, the son of Ishmael, the ruler of the house of Judah, for all the king's matters. Also the Levites will be officials before you. Evidently there was a religious court and there was a civil court at the time. He says, behave courageously and the Lord will be with the good. We need judges who are courageous and who are good. Well, chapter 20 should be entitled, How to Handle a Crisis. Anybody ever experienced a crisis situation? How do you handle a crisis? We learn in chapter 20. Here's what happens. A coalition of southern nations launch a surprise attack against Jehoshaphat. And immediately, the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat, calls a prayer meeting. A whole day of fasting and seeking God. It happened after this that the people of Moab, the people of Ammon, and others with them, besides the Ammonites, came to battle against Jehoshaphat. Then some came and told Jehoshaphat, saying, "A great multitude is coming against you from beyond the sea, from Syria, and they are in Hazazon Tamar," or literally the pruning of the palm, which is in Gedi, which means the spring of the goats. In Gedi is, probably one of my two or three favorite places in Israel. I could spend days in En Gedi. It's an oasis situated right there by the Dead Sea. It's a place to relax. It's a place to unwind. It's a place to spend time with God. It was in En Gedi that David hid in the rocks and hid from Saul and spent time with God and wrote many of the Psalms, I believe, were written in En Gedi. It's a wonderful place.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.